And we're back.
Black and a half.
Episode number 58.
59.
Shit.
59. And we, the one and only Black and a Half, by the way.
The one and only.
The
yeah.
one and only.
Now,
there's no other one out
no
there.
Other,
nobody.
No substitutes.
Anyone who tried to step in and take our place.
Yeah.
They're out of here.
You're done.
They quit on their own.
Works for me.
I spent money to try to stop them, and then they just stopped. Anyway.
Even better.
Some of you know what we're talking about. Some of you need to do some research.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Black and a Half. Hey, I'm Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Manny Martin.
And together we are Black and a Half, and we bring you this podcast weekly whenever we're in season.
Yes.
So we're in season four right
season
now.
Season four, and this is episode two of season four.
Yeah.
But
we like to want the numbers high, so we're never
going
to keep counting.
Yeah,
high.
Totally.
This episode, we have a... Okay, last year we did the 48-hour film festival for the first time. And so for this episode, we brought in the city producer for the Seattle 48-hour film festival, Kirk Nordenstrom. Not Nordstrom.
Yeah, okay, we thought we were going to get a discount.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get a discount at Nordstrom's. I thought I was going to get all this. But no, it turns out a couple letters difference.
Yeah.
And, you don't make those connections you thought you were going to.
Yeah. For all you inspired and aspiring
filmmakers,
this is a special episode. You're going to want to listen in.
Yeah. We break down the 48-hour film festival. We find out, we get Kirk's story on how he got to be the only city producer.
And how he's expanded.
Expanding. Talk a little bit about the Seattle film
community as a whole.
Network. This will be a great one for filmmakers to listen to. And maybe you'll join Black and a Half as we're going to be tackling the 48-hour film festival this year.
We're going to try to win all the awards, guys.
Every single one.
Yep.
We're going to win best film, best black film.
Yep. Best white
best
film.
Best half black film.
There you go.
Kind of new categories.
Best Puerto Rican film.
Best.
Taking this shit over.
Speaking of, if any Puerto Ricans want to join our team,
yeah.
We are looking
for. We are a diverse team.
Because we want that.
We want everybody.
This is next week. You can, this show, come check me out.
Oh.
Real Nerds of Comedy.
That's right.
Show April 11th at Laughs Comedy Club.
It's
I can
be
do
fun.
That.
April 19th. You can catch me headlining over at
Nine Yards
Brewery.
And
I think, yeah, Silas will be crushing in front of us, so we can't follow. But you
I'll
know.
Be there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
be crushing the seat.
Oh, whatever.
If I haven't lost weight yet.
Oh gosh, we're all working on it.
Yeah,
we hear about Silas's
we'll talk
scale
about,
stories.
Yeah, I'll have a scale story for this one. adventures in dieting. That's what Black and a Half is. It's my talk about yo-yo dieting. It's like whatever. What's Silas into now?
Yeah. And how's Manny trying to keep the weight off?
I'm fasting now. That's what I'm doing. Intermittent fasting.
You look good.
Not all the time. Just 16 hours a day.
You look good. You look good.
Last night, though, I took one bite in the middle of, like, I'm putting food away.
Yeah.
And I unconsciously like threw like a tomato. I took a bite of it.
Yeah.
And I put it in. Well, no, you shake your head. And Gretchen was like, well, what's the big deal?
Did you throw it out?
No, I ate on a swallow. I'm like, oh, son of a bitch. And the reason I'm mad is because apparently this intermediate thing, you have to go like 10 hours, 10 or 12 hours of not eating.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hit ketosis like for a short time and it burns the fat. So I basically reset it when I did that. And I was like, I ruined my ketosis for the whole day.
Oh,
like,
shit.
I was like, well, I won't go into ketosis.
So then it starts burning. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it just goes back to the other stuff. So I was just mad because I'm like, it just takes one little bite.
Damn.
And you screw it up.
Well,
so
you just learned something.
Yeah. So it's hard, but we'll do it.
Yeah. Today's episode is brought to you by.
Today's episode is brought to you by the letter R.
Yep.
For rejected.
me and Silas's early childhood life by women.
Yes. Women, everybody.
Yeah.
Jobs.
Yeah.
Everything. So we got that coming up. I just announced that we're looking for a fundraiser.
Yes.
So any of you have any interesting ways to raise money for us to produce a film this summer?
Yeah.
Hit us up. We have a fundraising goal of $1,000.
Do bar mitzvahs.
Hey, if you would buy a Black and a Half shirt, let me know because we're talking about putting some out.
Totally. We'll come host your kid's birthday party. don't know.
That
$1,000
seems a little pedo. I don't know. Like, okay. Like, host kids party. How about we'll host
You know what's interesting? Do you remember that time that they asked us to do the comedy at that one kid's birthday party, and then we didn't, and then he became famous, and he got his own TV show.
You know what? We'll host your kids' TV show. We'll do your kids' parties. I have no problem. I got 3 minutes clean
that I
can do.
Yeah.
Stupid.
I know.
Regrets. Okay. But here we are. Episode number 59. Kirk Nordenstrom.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
So I was at Fred Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
I went to buy a bathroom scale.
Okay.
Let reality hit me.
Yeah.
A little bit harder because we lost one in our move, so I need a new one. So I go there. I go into there and it says like all 25% off. Right. I see the sign 25% off bathroom scales, and almost all of them are priced $19.95. Like $19.99. I'm like 20. I'm like, that's like $15. This is great. So I grab this bamboo one.
Yeah.
And I bring it to the self checkout, and it rings up like $23.99.
Okay.
I'm like, well, okay, the discount's probably after at the end, but it should be $19.99 to begin with. And so I get the cashier over, and I'm like, so this is wrong. So it's supposed to be like $19.99 with then 25% off.
Yeah.
And she starts to type in. She's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that's the price. I looked at it. That's it. It's like, I'm going to call grocery. And I'm like, you really? I'm like, that's fine. That's fine. It's there. And so she calls, and like the guy just asks for the number, and she gives it to him. And she's like, yeah, that's the price. What's the discount? And I'm like, no, that's not. It should say there was a discount.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm getting mad about it. I'm like, well, fine. I don't want it. Then I'm not taking it. And I was so like mad. Because I was like, well, that's like $8 difference, you know?
Right.
Like, and so I go and take, I have my baby with me, right? My 1 year old. I go to the car, I drop off my bag, and I go back in the store because I'm going to get a picture of it because I'm mad because I've gone before and they've had just wrong prices on things. And so I go in there, and one, it was $29.99, and it's the sign said 20% off. I was completely wrong about everything. And I was wondering, have you ever been in the situation where you like so positive that you saw something that was completely wrong?
Like, I don't know about you, Kirk, but like I'm just so mellow that I could give a shit. You know what I mean? I'm just like, it is what it is. Like Silas has developed into a 45-year-old white woman in his
well,
later
I am
years.
45.
I know, but you become a white woman who's like,
well, you don't. The point you like
you're surveying the line, sir. Did you see this?
You don't care if something is mispriced.
I mean, not really. I mean, I'll just put it back and just be like, well, I guess it's not what I wanted. You know, like but that's me. I'm so passive.
Well,
that it builds up.
But you didn't buy. You did the same thing with me. Just you didn't have them check.
What do you mean?
You're like, so you'd say, well, I did the same thing. I don't want it.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally.
But I went
mean,
back to make.
But I wouldn't I make a gonna, scene about it. I mean.
I mean, not like people circled. I'm at Fred Meyer. I'm not going to like the amount of people in there stealing stuff. That's the thing. So many people steal stuff. I'm just like, really?
What about you, Kirk? You ever had it?
Well, okay.
I try to avoid conflict.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm just
no,
so
but
mellow.
My thing. Well, okay. I guess the point I was wondering was, have you ever been so seen like something where you were so sure?
Right.
And then turned out you were completely wrong. Like about just like what you had seen. Like, I had totally different number. No, I mean, I vividly remembered seeing the price.
Mm-hmm.
And even the big giant sign said 25% off. In my head, it said 25, and it was 20. It wasn't even close. Like, these numbers were not even close to my head. And I was like, I swear I had one of those moments where there's this old Twilight Zone episode where every minute is built by these people.
Okay.
Like creatures build every minute. And they had the explanation on why you lose keys sometimes when you're like, you swore they were right there. And like, because they forgot to put them there.
Oh,
and so until the next minute came across and they're there. And so I felt like
it was one of those
like,
episodes.
I think I just got punked. Like someone changed the sign. I would have sworn on anything. I would have bet $100.
Yeah.
That I was correct on both things. Like not even a doubt. I would have bet her $100.
It's amazing what the brain can do. You know what I mean? Yeah. Especially when you're determined. Yeah. To...
I mean, I do that more with like dates.
Yeah.
Calendar dates. Okay.
Like, you know, I'll show up on April 5th for something that's on, you know, May 4th. Or, you know, I'll just do something, you know, dumb like that.
Right. Man, it's interesting what your mind will allow you to believe, especially when you're, like, passionate about it. But, I mean, here's the thing. You stood there for a minute, and you're like, oh, this is – but, see, I wonder how long you stood there and looked at the scales.
Oh, I was so stoked about the price.
That you just got.
I was trying to figure out which one, because there was like 6-7 different ones. Right. I was like, okay, well, the bamboo, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, it's a little stylish, you know, and whether I wanted to go with 2.2 increments or
right.
one. So I was there a while.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was flabbergasted that I just completely saw different things.
You're right.
I had
a moment like that kind of in Target where like it was during the holidays, long line. Was getting some sort of video game, and it was for somebody's birthday, and I'm like, oh, it looks like it's super cheap, let's go ahead and get this thing. And this young kid is like, hey man, I'll help you over here, you know, young black kid. I'm like, oh shit, that's cool, you know, the brother hookup, whatever. And so he brings me to the front of the line, and then he rings it up, and I'm like, that seems higher than what I thought it was. He double charged me, and then I was like hey man, I think this is wrong. He was like, oh, sorry, you got to take that up to the front. I'm like, are you serious? You can just fucking do this right now. And I was like, oh, all right, whatever. And that's how passive I am. I should have just been like, no, man, you need to fix this now. You fucked it up clearly. Like, but whatever. They got me my refund.
You know what? I think there was a few, it was like 2 years ago, I hit my point on letting things go.
Yeah.
I'd gone through McDonald's drive-through.
Right.
And I was about 7 to 10 minutes away that I'd driven when I got to my cheeseburger.
Right.
And there was no patty in it. And I was just like, are you? And I was debating, am I going to? It's a dollar. Like, am I going to? It's like, you know what? There's a principle here. And I drove back and brought it in. I was like, there's no patty. And they're like, oh, and they thought it was hilarious. Like, Sally, you didn't put a patty in it. And I'm like, got me a new one. And I was like, from that point on, I've never let the, I was like, no, I'm returning things just from now on. It's principle.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, where we live in Burien, you know, it's a bit of a hike to get to any,
right.
you know, amenities. So we end up ordering from like Grubhub and Uber Eats and whatnot a lot. And, you know, there are times where I'll order something and it'll just come wrong.
Yeah.
Or something will be
missing. Right. And
And then, you know, I'll let them know.
Right.
It's easy because, you know, it's all text based. So it's not confrontational. So I'm a lot more comfortable. Yeah. And, they'll just like refund it.
Yeah.
And then, like, that's the end of it.
Right.
Like,
there was one.
But then I still have the food that's wrong, right?
Exactly. Like ordering again from them.
There was one that we ordered, and you couldn't call to get a hold of anybody. You couldn't text to get a hold of anybody. And so, like, we're just out, like, $40. They're like, oh, you have to go through this. Oh, you have to go through that. And I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just out $40. Like, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's irritating, but it's just, I won't order from them again, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah.
I think... It was just for me. It was just like, it's forgot the damn patty.
It's rough.
Like I won't.
You had one job.
If I'm in a restaurant, I will not say anything.
Yeah.
If my food's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like it. Like the only time I'll do it is if it's like inedible because I can't do a rare steak or anything.
Right.
So I just can't. And then I'm like, I just need it cooked.
I don't know
more
if you ever heard about
can't.
the taco story.
I haven't heard. No, I have not heard
him
the
Taco
Bell. No,
the Tostada.
You'll go back and listen to that episode. Oh, you know what, Manny? I'm really ashamed that you brought that up because I broke down.
And you went back.
I went back 2 weeks ago once, and I've been ashamed ever since then. I didn't even check in on Facebook. I was so ashamed.
Don't you feel like
I was boycotting one Taco Bell because they did the tostada wrong? It just gave me shit about it, and so I just haven't been eating there. It's my personal striving. I was like, it's just the Taco Bell that used to be near me.
Yeah,
it closed. Oh. It's a Taco Time now. So, I want that bullshit.
It's so tough because it's like I love. So I grew up in California, that's all we have, just Taco Bell, right? There's no Taco Time.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I moved up here. It's like,
or El Pollo Loco.
Yeah, exactly. Bullshit. Right. And I'm like, oh, Taco Bell is amazing, guys. You don't love it? And they're like, no, we only do Taco Time.
Taco
and
it's, it's fresh.
It's fresh. And
yeah, that's why I go to fast food for fresh.
Right, exactly. But it's like you need a second mortgage in order to afford anything at Taco Time. So
yeah,
it's just
no kidding. It's like, it's expensive. I can get, you know, I mean, Taco Bell's not cheap anymore. I remember I used to get out of there with $2, I'd be full.
Yeah, seriously.
No.
And it actually tasted a lot more legitimately Mexican time ago. Now it's like, oh, everything's Dorito flavored now. What the hell's going on?
My daughter, I'm always like, well, what kind of taco? She's like, Dorito Loco. And I'm like, you don't even know. I just grew up with the.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't that much of a taco fan when I was young. Yeah. So I was like, I'm a burrito.
Yeah.
But I'm so old that did they have red burritos and green burritos when you were younger?
Wait, actually, yes.
Well, if you went to a legit taqueria in the Bay Area. Yeah.
Okay, but it was Taco Bell's. You could get red burritos or green burritos. Because my dad always got the green burritos, and I thought they were disgusting.
Your dad was living in?
This was in L.A.
Okay, that's right.
Orange County.
Yeah.
So everywhere around there. Okay. But it was all the way up to Northern California, I remember.
Yeah.
And one day there were just no green burritos anymore.
Did you guys ever see the Conan O'Brien episode where he got to make... it's like the make a your own taco type of back room where they try to come up with new ideas.
Oh, at Taco Bell?
Yeah.
I think I did see that one.
Yeah. And he made an Irish taco. It was
a cabbage and potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. And a cabbage and it was gross.
Could also be a Polish taco.
There you go. Yeah. Right. So
there's never been a big taco movie, has there?
I don't think there has.
We've had burgers with White Castle.
Yeah, White Castle.
Tacos are so popular, you'd think
there's no burrito
something.
Movie, huh? I don't know.
Well, you know, I gotta take my hat off here for a second.
Yeah,
I feel like
I got my.
What's this?
Nice
Trejo's tacos.
Yeah,
that's legit.
Wait, what is this?
It's Danny Trejo. He's got a couple of.
Wait, this is taqueries. The actor, right?
Yeah,
With Flash.
Right. Yeah.
I love him on Flash.
Yeah, he's got a couple of.
I know he does other stuff, but now I literally can't think of another role right now other than Flash. The dad.
He was the what you call it with the knives.
He was in a Slayer video.
Slayer video.
He was in a Slayer video.
That's an obscure.
What was that crazy? What was that crazy movie that he was in with all the L? Oh man,
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
Was it a Quentin Tarantino movie?
I felt like
I know.
It had
yes.
the. It was kind of like Quentin Tarantino.
It was like a spinoff of a Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, it's going to bug me.
Yeah, but he's got a series of taquerias and a cantina and a coffee and donut shop in L.A. now.
Mm-hmm.
That's so smart.
And it's really, really good. And when I was down there in August for Holly Shorts, Con Air was playing, on the TV.
Yeah.
When I was... in the cantina, just off Hollywood Boulevard. And it was a scene where Nicolas Cage kicks Danny Trejo's ass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can they let this be on the TV in this place?
The craziest scene is when, was that him at the end where it's like his arm is hanging on the handcuff and then he's kind of passed out right next to it and they remove him and his arm still dangling? Did you ever see that in Con Air?
No.
Oh, such a good scene.
I've never actually seen the whole movie.
It's one of those just fun movies to watch. You can pick it up anywhere.
That's
watch
a Sunday hangover
it
movie.
It is, totally.
Total Sunday hangover movie.
It's been one of those films that I've been I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
And whenever it's on, I turn it, if I see it on, I'm like, well, no, I need to see it from the beginning.
Yeah.
So I turn it off. So
it's got an all-star cast.
Right.
Yeah.
I get these movies that I just want to see, but then I'm like, I also don't want to see it edited.
Yeah.
Edited on TV.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. You mother farmer.
So I'm like, I don't know why. I just don't just watch on TV when it's on sometime because I don't know when I'm going to.
Let me ask you this. Danny Trejo said in an interview that it's stupid for actors to do their own stunts. I partially agree because he was saying that if you get injured or messed up, then everybody's out of work.
Say so. If Tom motherfucking Cruise does it, well, I think you have to.
Well, no, that's right? what he was saying. He Come was on. Saying, like, it's stupid for Tom Cruise to do it because if Tom Cruise gets brutally injured and can't finish the movie, how many people are out of work because he didn't use
and
the stunt
double? That is why, I believe, isn't that why we have the mustache problem with Superman?
Superman.
Isn't it because Tom Cruise got injured and they had to delay shooting for a little bit?
Oh, was it?
And
then
he grew the mustache, and by the time... Yeah, the way everything lined up.
That's crazy.
I think it's because of that.
Wow. I wouldn't be surprised.
So he has. Yeah, he has gotten injured and it's pulled everything back. So,
gosh.
I mean, yeah, I think there's... But some actors, I think that's with the pride, right? Like the pride point where they make, like, he does his own stunts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the actor. You know, like Jackie Chan doing it, that's a whole different, you know, or Jet Li, that's a whole different.
How many bones has, like, Jackie broken?
I think all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, Bruce Lee broke his neck once.
Yeah,
like back in the 70s when he was a, you know, very young man.
No shit.
He got grievously injured by Bruce Lee.
Yeah, they should have broken a stuntman's neck instead.
Oh, you're saying Jackie Chan got his neck
broken?
That's right.
Yeah.
Man, and I guess like Bruce Lee really took a liking to Jackie.
Oh,
So
totally took him under his wing.
Yeah, so cool. Man,
wait, they were alive at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Jackie's a lot older than I thought.
Well, Jackie, he was like super young.
Yeah, he was.
I can't remember.
I'm sure Bruce Lee was like older. So if Bruce Lee was probably in his late 20s to early 30s, then Jackie probably was like in his
early 20s. Yeah,
yeah.
I have no sense of how old a lot of actors are based on the films they're still doing, and you find out like, like what?
Sam Jackson. Holy
shit. Like, yeah, Sam Jackson has been the same age for like 30 years.
And he's in his 70s.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Still doing these movies.
Still doing these movies.
It's crazy.
And he looks like he hasn't aged a bit. But, you know, I guess the reason why he shaved his head is because he's balding. Or he's been balding for a long time.
Oh.
So.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean.
If there's anyone who could pull off being bald, it's Samuel Jackson.
Right.
I mean.
But, I mean, isn't that kind of genius if you think about it? If you shave all your facial hair and your hair, nobody ever sees gray. So they never truly know how old you are. So you just have your eyebrows until they go out. Yeah.
Well, just, I mean, I think for black people in particular, it doesn't, you don't,
his skin doesn't,
you don't
as
seem
much.
To age as much.
Yeah.
Well, I assume they all do have work or something done because everybody's just not aging.
Angela Bassett. Yeah. And like Black Panther, she still looks like she's like 40. Yeah. I'm like, jeez.
Yeah. There's a lot of actors that I'm like, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you're not doing a lot of work. I just don't know how. Yeah, 70. I just can't. I'm blown away. I didn't realize he was that old, but I was like, I know we can't be young.
Totally. You know, it like blew my mind just how old, whatchamacallit, Men in Black, not Will Smith, but Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones is 112.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks it.
He looks it at this point. Yeah.
Well, he's looked it for a long time.
Right, right.
A very long time.
Morgan Freeman, like, I don't even want to know how old Morgan is. Like,
you know, I feel like a lot of these actors, they look like ageless, like Sean Connery, until one day. Suddenly they're like, holy crap, like he went from 55
to like
92.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's hard living, right?
One movie, it was like, I just can't keep up anymore.
I mean, look at Mick Jagger and all those other guys, huh? You know, all the
we have to
find out. Yeah, seriously.
that's why they're on radio. Movies are crazy. So Kirk, were you an actor at any point?
No.
What was your director? Like, what did you...
I mean, I had a really circuitous route into this industry. I mean, I studied photography and political theory at UC Santa Cruz.
Nice.
Thinking I was going to go into photojournalism, which is a really hard gig.
Yeah. What would you even, like, what degree or what field would you get into with that? Or, like, what jobs are open?
I mean, really, I wanted to, like, go on tour with Primus and take photos.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's, you know, that was, like, my dream job. Or, you know, on the road with Faith No More, you know.
Nice.
But, you know, instead I got
people
jobs.
Won't just pay you for that?
Yeah, if you're Jay Blakesberg or Charles Peterson, you know. Yeah, they will, and they'll pay you a lot. But
it's interesting because, I mean, I feel like that's more... I mean, probably more so in demand now because it's, like, a lot of people... Like, I mean, even Kevin Hart has a guy who follows him around and just does all this videography and, you know, taking pictures of him and puts it online. So, I mean, multi-million-dollar business now.
Oh, well, no. I mean, I have a friend that, a couple of twins that did the 48 a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. They won 2 years in a row.
Nice.
And, you know, they're, like, too busy to do it because, you know, they're doing really well
right.
in their jobs. And one of them got to just, like, go on tour a couple of times with Macklemore.
Wow.
And did a whole bunch of documentary stuff on, you know, for Macklemore.
How cool is that?
That's a cool job.
Yeah.
You know?
I've said if the first person I hire is not going to be like an assistant.
Right.
It's going to be a videographer. To be documenting stuff. So every time I have ideas for stuff, we can just start doing it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I want to do a video about this right now. Let's do it.
Just start filming.
Yeah.
So, yeah, money.
And so, okay, so what was the route getting? So, okay, wait, what was your official, what's your title for the 40?
I'm the Seattle city producer.
Okay.
But also this year we're starting it in Missoula.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So you're the Missoula producer as well?
Yeah. So I finally took on a co-producer this year officially. Chris Flink has been like helping out the last couple of 48s, and I just wanted to see if she was interested. I knew she was like the right person to help me out.
Right.
To help grow it, because I kind of hit the wall of what I can do on my own.
Totally.
And she's totally in, and she's from Missoula originally. And, you know, until recently, my mom lived just south of there, and my brother's family moved to Corvallis, Montana in 2014. So I spent a lot of time in Montana, and Chris and I were like, I haven't started in a new city in, you know, 14 years. It'd be kind of fun to, you know, start a new market. And, you know, registration for it opened yesterday.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
And I'm just realizing what a good deal I've kind of crafted for myself in terms of running it here in Seattle, the relationship with SIFF, because like getting a new theater in a new city where we don't really know anyone has been tricky.
So are you guys all set up as far as connections go out there?
We're working on it.
Okay. Yeah. I think I might have somebody. So after, this, I'll tell, I'll tell you who to get, maybe get in contact with. Yeah. I think that there's some stuff we could.
He knows a guy who owns a chicken restaurant.
Yeah. No. But yeah.
That could actually be useful, though. You know, that could be really useful.
So how did I guess, well, I mean.
So you're city producer for that. That's the only thing you produce for the year? Or
I mean, that's like the big event. But I mean, you know, day to day, I'm, you know, freelance editor and, you know, jack of all trades in the industry. You know, the bulk of my income actually comes from editing.
Okay.
But the 48, you know, I love doing it. Yeah. I mean, so much that I dyed my hair for the Filmapalooza event in Orlando a couple of weeks ago.
Heck yeah,
our official colors are purple and orange.
Okay.
I'm never doing it again.
Right, yeah.
Because my scalp was a mess for like 2 weeks. But
So were you a film like buff when you were young? Or
Yeah, I mean, I always was. I was just a fantasy sci-fi kid, and then I got into, you know.
What were your favorite sci-fi fantasies?
I mean, I was five when Star Wars came out.
Oh,
that's,
there you go.
You know, it was like when I was five, Star Wars and Kiss. That was my life.
Okay.
You know, I read The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings when I was eight, and you know, I just devoured like the entire canon of, you know, sci-fi and fantasy.
Right.
And then a buddy in freshman year in high school turned me on to Kurt Vonnegut.
Okay.
Like, okay, this is, you know, I like absurdity. This is my new thing.
Nice.
But, you know, same guy, you know, we'd always go to Tower Records and raid the midnight movie section.
Mm-hmm.
So The Forbidden Zone.
That's right.
Dead Alive, Meet the Feebles. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, all the weirdest shit we could possibly, you know, Fritz the Cat. We just loved all that really fringe, weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the movie we watched, you know, the two movies we watched the most were, you know, Holy Grail and Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
I loved Evil Dead 2 so much that my first cat that I got in college was named Ash.
That's awesome. Tower Records, man, that takes me back.
Yeah, they had a great midnight movie section, the one in Campbell.
Okay.
That was the one we always went to, and they just, you know, the weirdest shit we could find. It was great.
Now, why are they called midnight movies? Because they were like what aired on TV just
after
hours?
You know, it was MST3K level stuff before MST3K was a thing.
Yeah.
And it was always the stuff that, you know, you'd find on, you know, Channel 72, you know, on the antenna at 2 a.m. You know, just those just weird movies.
The Gladiator film, and they have Reeboks on.
Yeah. Kinda. Yeah.
Was it Tower Records who did that, like, thing where you could get, like, 10 CDs for, like, a penny or whatever?
No, that was Columbia House.
Columbia House.
That was the
mail-in
order.
Yeah, man.
That was a rite of passage.
Wasn't it,
getting in trouble with them. That's
Did I tell you about the first time I messed with them? I signed up, and then they accidentally sent me something. I'm like, I don't want this. Then they sent me a bill.
Yeah.
Ignored it. I was like 13.
Yeah.
And they sent me a note saying, like, you need to send it. We'll send you to collections. I wrote back, said, I'm 13 years old. You shouldn't have done this with me. And I mailed it back, never heard from them again.
Hilarious.
I knew the law. Yeah, there I knew you the go. Law at the time. I was like, I'm not 18. I'm not responsible. My dad told me that. Do from anything 13. You want. He's like,
you see the pattern there from 13, sending shit back, yelling at people to 45. And fucking
that's right. Write them now.
Fred Meyer. Out of what the scale. Fuck you guys.
That's how I got my first Fishbone albums was through Columbia House.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, by the way, the irony of the scale thing.
Yeah.
I ended up buying one on Amazon for $26.
I need to get a new scale in my house, man. I'm just packing on the pounds. It's awful.
Okay, so you're a film buff. You like the absurd stuff. And then what age was it or when was it that you thought, like, oh, this is something I actually want to pursue?
I moved to Seattle in 95 when I was 23, and I was working at a Kinko's in Los Gatos, mm-hmm. and my, you know, best friend from high school and college moved up here. You know, my girlfriend and I broke up, and I was just bored. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know, I adore Soundgarden and Mudhoney and, mm-hmm. you know, all those bands. Like, I've never been to Seattle. Screw it. I'll move there. And I got a job at the Kinko's in Shoreline.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, designing business cards, and I got into the graphics and design world about 6 years, and started freelancing, and then got laid off from a cushy gig when the market crashed in 2001.
Right.
And I was thinking about moving back to the Bay Area and, you know, finally finishing up my degree at the Academy of Art.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to, like, move from my friends.
Right.
So I, you know, I was like, oh, screw it. I'll take this 40-week program at the Seattle Film Institute, mm-hmm. figuring I'd go into cinematography. Because it was just, you know, it was less than a year. It was an easy commitment, trade school.
Right.
And I wound up in editing. You know, we actually edited something on, you know, 60mm flatbed. And I was like, oh, this is fun. Super 8 sucks. But 60mm, you know, I have big meaty hands. Working with tiny film is not fun.
Yeah.
But, 60mm is fun, and then, you know, we learned Final Cut, and I was like, oh, it's easy, too. This is great.
Dude, that's crazy.
So, I just decided that at 30, I have my midlife crisis early,
right.
go into the crazy profession,
mm-hmm.
and stay in Seattle, of all places. I mean, I should have just, like, picked up and moved to L.A.,
right?
You know, but...
it's always interesting. I mean, like, so I have a cousin who's in L.A. right now, and she's looking to get her master's, but she's looking to go to either... she's trying to get her master's in film, and it's either she's going to UNC, Florida, or one other place. But the schools in California, she was telling me, are like $100K a piece for the master's. And is it even worth it? I mean, she was saying if you get into USC, that it's more of a, you're already connected to like Disney and stuff. There's jobs right off the bat. So
I just can't imagine still making enough money.
Yeah. I mean, it depends where you get in. Yeah. At Disney, right? If you're going to be working in, like...
But here's the problem. Like, I bet for some people mm-hmm. that do that, they're really good,
mm-hmm.
and they get snagged up, and they get good positions right away.
Right.
But you know there's some people who just squeak in, aren't that good,
mm-hmm.
and nobody really ends up wanting to work with them, and they just owe $100,000, and they work.
Dude, I won't say this person's name on the podcast, but his wife got a doctor's, like, degree. But it wasn't like a real doctor. It was like a I don't know if naturopath is a real doctor, but she was like,
it's a real doctor.
Yeah, but it's like $250,000 owed. And it's like, are you ever going to compensate that? I don't know. Or make that back or pay it off? Probably
one
not.
One day when maybe the apocalypse happens and there's only, don't have pharmacies anymore. And they're like, I know how to fix things with stones and vibrations from these harmonics. And then like, oh, you're the best doctor.
No, you got to move to Los Gatos. You got to pick your market right.
There you go.
You know, Los Gatos and Santa Cruz where.
Right, where everybody's like, I just want the natural healing.
And I got tons of money.
Right.
You know,
it's hard to be a naturopath and move to like Alabama, right? Where they're like, oh, we don't even believe in medicine. God's gonna take care of it.
That's rough though. Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you have any recommendations for any like film school or if they're trying to get their master's?
I mean, what's your opinion about film school? I've been discussing this greatly with his wife.
Yeah, she wants to go to film school.
I I believe you get out of it what you put into it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's for everyone.
Right.
You know, but if you're going to go, mm-hmm. you know, like I went because I learn better kind of in, you know, a structured environment.
Right.
And, you know, I was a good student in high school, a good student in college.
Totally.
And, you know, I like having the structure of it. Not so much, you know, the professor's knowledge is always very, very handy.
Right.
But, I like that it just gives me the launch point for me to do extra.
Exactly.
You know.
I mean, that is a good point. I mean, I'm kind of like a learn through, like, trial and error. And it's like through school you're going to get that. But also, I guess, with film, you know, and being on different crews, you can get that too. But
oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I know, you know, handful of, you know, PAs that I met in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're actually successful, you know, like producers for Amazon now. You know, I mean,
no joke.
You know,
so
they
did
just,
they go to school or
no? You know, no, these are no. people that just started getting on sets, and wow. you know,
my argument has been okay. I am very pro education and pro like going into everything. I'm in favor of comedy classes mm-hmm. for stand up comedy.
Can you recommend a good one? I want to take
I can.
A class.
Well,
cool.
Well, okay,
acting
afterwards. They haven't
all right.
If they start sponsoring this program, I'll name them my name. But until then, this is after. But. Like, I feel like the prices of all these schools have gotten so high.
Yeah.
That makes me start questioning the payoff of it. And I've what I was telling his wife was, you know, for that much money, you know how many films you could produce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that, that's a lot of money. If you're going to end up paying this cash, you know, unless you are so positive you're going to be doing this. And I've heard from some other folks that film school it'll make you a great PA.
Yeah.
You know, like, but a lot of people don't end up focusing on anything, and then they're just not, you know, they're the jack of all trades, but they can't do anything. Like, they're not great at anything.
Yeah. yeah.
So I'm there like, was, if you want to be a cinematographer, just start doing it. And
well, getting, the interesting thing was, you know, not to crap on any schools out here, but there was one that has horrible Yelp reviews, but, you know, has a really high, like, price to go to
yeah.
it, you know? So it's just like, they said that the teachers are kind of checked out. They're really working on their own projects. So it's like, you know, do you really want?
Well, it should be.
Well, I mean, I get it. You know,
I wouldn't work. I would never take a class from someone who wasn't working on their.
Well,
own
I mean,
stuff.
I mean, of course, you want them to be working on their own
yeah.
stuff, but you also want them to teach you in the process, right? Especially
yeah,
if
yeah.
you're paying this, you know. So.
Right.
Yeah.
There's something else that I heard people. It's kind of, okay in real estate. People talk about like,
mm-hmm.
oh, like they would never work for like a broker that was also trying to do sales, and I was like. Well, mine was, and I learned everything. I trusted what she said, and then we got a replacement
right.
who wasn't really.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what the hell he was talking about most of the time. So I was like, I want someone who, you know, doesn't just know the forms. Like,
right.
I want to know, like, so I can ask advice. And
right.
so yeah. I would want someone actually, like, is doing some film work, mm-hmm. and so they can say, oh, yeah, no, I just dealt with this. Like,
well, let me ask you this. Since I was new to it last year, just working under Silas, Mr. Award-winning filmmaker.
That's right.
How long has it been in existence, the 48-hour film festival?
It was started in 2001
okay.
in D.C.
Oh, wow. Okay.
By Liz Langston and Mark Rupert.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally did it. They were, you know, filmmaking partners. And, you know, mini DV cameras were becoming affordable.
Right.
And software, you know, like mm-hmm. Final Cut was becoming affordable. Mm-hmm. And Premiere was affordable. Like, let's just see if we can make a movie in two
yeah.
days. Gave themselves some rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, huh, this actually worked. And then they did the first official 48-hour film project
yeah.
in D.C. where they invited a handful of teams.
That's cool.
So that was the first one. And then it just caught on and, you know,
yeah.
went to L.A. and New
yeah.
York. And
how many
so you were editing when this started?
Already? I was in film school when it first started.
Okay.
Okay.
But in 2004... you know, I was 2 years out of film school and, mm-hmm. you know, still building the career. And
right.
Still taking, you know, graphics jobs at Microsoft and print shops and whatnot just
right.
to stay afloat. So I wanted to do any competition I could.
Yeah.
And I heard about this 48-hour film project, but we didn't have it in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard that they had it in Portland.
Oh.
And I just got outraged. I'm like, Portland? Why does Portland have it? This is before they, you know, just like overshadowed us
yeah.
as a production, you
right.
know, hub.
Yeah.
And I just started emailing the founders, Mark and Liz. It's ridiculous. Why does Portland have this and we don't? You
yeah.
know, there's such a dumpy little city and we're Seattle. And finally they're like, you know, just to shut me up.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we have this 72-hour competition that goes on, you know, across the entire country. It isn't attached to a city.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested, try that. So I put out a call to my friends, and like 40 people said, yeah, we want to do it.
Yeah.
So we registered two teams, and I produced two teams in one weekend.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And the team that I was editing for, it was not good. It was not good at all. But the other team wrote and shot a really good like noir detective film.
Okay.
And it won like best use of genre at Filmapalooza in 2005.
Nice.
And Mark and Liz offered, it was at Cinequest Film Festival in San Jose. So they offered me a platinum pass to come, you know, come down to it. And since I'm from there, I was like, yeah, I get to see my brother and his, you know, finally meet his bride to be. Just partied my ass off with the friends that came down. We met all these cool people from, you know, all over Europe and the States.
Right.
And after, at the final party, we're hanging out at, I can't remember the name of the hotel. It's like this swanky one downtown. And hanging out, drinking with Philip Baker Hall, you know, best known as the library cop on Seinfeld.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
We're hanging out with him and just getting wasted with him. And it was totally.
Yeah.
It was. And he was just like, you know, you kids, you know, you got to stick with it and power through it. And he was giving us a total motivational speech. Right. It was great. And Liz, one of the co-founders, was like, so what'd you think of Filmapalooza? What'd you think of the National Film Challenge? And I just drunk me was like, yeah, it was fucking great. Oh, my God, I loved it. I can't wait to do it again. She's like, well, how would you feel about setting up the 48 in Seattle? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. I woke up the next morning with, like, you know, worst hangover I'd had in like 5 years and just went, oh, man, I'm an editor. What did I just sign up to do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, now I'm committed. And, you know, we had a goal of, you know, 24 teams the first year and we hit it. And, you know, a couple friends helped produce and it kind of fell by the wayside as it went along. And I mean, that's how it all started. Me being drunk, hanging out with the library cop from Seinfeld. And, you know, I learned immediately.
So you've been the Seattle producer from the beginning?
From the beginning, yeah.
So what year was that? Awesome.
That was 2005.
Wow.
2005. Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Gosh. So I guess over the years, have you seen any body leaps of stardom over, like, from acting or?
Not so much from Seattle. Okay. I mean, I've seen producers, cinematographers, directors, writers go on to, you know, very, you know,
big projects,
productive careers.
Nice. Okay.
You know, because there's nothing big to do in Seattle. Right. You know, the people that stay, you know, and kind of like age out of the 48, they just get so busy with work that they, you know, they can't find the time to do it because they're so busy.
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of a mixed blessing for me because I was like, you know, I like having the legacy teams coming back.
Right.
And,
us new folks are like, go away. We want a chance.
Hey, well, you know, the Harvey brothers, they got unseated by some sock puppets, you know, one year. So
crazy.
So, you know, even the heavyweights can get taken down by relative newcomers.
Yeah.
It's such a cool thing to know that you were there from, you know, the birth of it and still with it, man.
I love doing it because, you know, it's community building has always been a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've opted to stay in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife has, you know, a good state job and she loves what she does.
Totally.
And, you know, it'd be super, super, super unfair of me to say, hey, we're going to move to LA and I'm going to try and make it. You know, it's like,
right.
Be justified grounds for divorce. If right. I did that. I'd be like, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Just take the house I don't want. No.
A question for you. As far as like, so, you know, because I'm just kind of getting into the film thing, like with Silas has been whatever for years, you know, you've known all this. Why does Seattle not have more tax breaks for film, I guess? Is it just the city council? Is it politicians?
It's at the state level. I mean, really, you know, I've worked with Washington Filmworks for, you know, about 6 years now, lobbying on behalf of our you know, motion picture competitiveness program.
Right.
It's underfunded. Okay. That's really It's underfunded for myriad reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I mean, it's underfunded because we don't have a state income tax.
Oh, okay.
That's really just the short, concise, you know, real
interesting
reason.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Because all the other states that have, you know, much larger
mm-hmm.
Film incentives have income taxes.
Right.
You know, and, you know, Oregon's kicking our ass because...
Right.
They have an income tax?
Yeah.
Oh, they just don't have sales tax?
They don't have sales tax. They have income tax.
I think our sales tax is high enough that should make up for it.
You'd think so, but we went like 3 years with our state legislature in contempt of court for the McCleary ruling, which made our lives really hard lobbying. So, I mean, that's the long and the short of it.
Right.
It's underfunded. It's a really good, well-designed program
mm-hmm.
that if it had more money,
right,
would generate a lot more jobs and attract a lot more.
Right.
Now, do you think there is just a hard reality that it just rains too much here for like the studios to really bank on shooting here?
Not at all. I mean, look at Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, also, like,
I don't know the weather there.
It's pretty much the same, just a little colder.
Every time I've gone up there, it's really nice.
I was going to say, well, I mean, do you see Amazon and like Microsoft trying to get more into the film game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they totally are. They just don't shoot here.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, I knew that
they do a lot of their corporate and commercial stuff here, which, I mean, employs a lot of people.
Right.
That's, you know, I was teaching in a professional, you know, professional practices session at the Seattle Film Institute.
Right.
And, you know, my first meeting with the five students, I'm like, okay, who here wants to make a living making narrative films? Three of them raised their hand, and I just said, move to Atlanta or L.A. the moment you graduate. Don't even think about staying here.
Yeah. Man, that's interesting.
I love this city. I'm not moving anywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I only wanted to work on, you know, narrative or documentary feature films,
yeah,
nah, you can't make a living doing that here. You have to supplement it. You have to really view filmmaking as a trade skill, as a craft.
Fascinating.
And, you know, I mean, I spent a year and a half just cutting Magic Hands cooking videos, which is great. They paid well. They're, you know, fantastic client.
Right.
Boring, boring work. But they were, like, super organized, easy to work with. And, you know, I was happy to have it.
Right.
So, yeah, if you live and work here, you're not just going to be on feature films and, you know, narrative content. You're going to have to supplement with other work and, you know, be happy with that. And, you know, I enjoy, you know, using my craft.
Right.
Regardless of, you know, content.
We had a guest a long time ago, a few years ago, Eddie Zanadakia and his partner there that
did Matt's Chance, right?
Yeah. And they had made he was like, no, we're committed, we're making sure things are being shot in Washington. They're gonna do that. That's the big push with everything is they just moved to LA.
Well, yeah.
They like eventually it just got too much that the draw was too much, too many offers there. I'm like, oh, you were my hope. I was hoping they were gonna bring it. And they're like, nope, we're out of here.
Yeah, but I mean, really what I think is most fascinating about Seattle is if you are an LGBTQ filmmaker, a person of color filmmaker, in particular, a woman filmmaker, this is your city.
Really? Why is that?
This is your city. Because we don't have like the entrenched, you know, set of rules that, you know, Atlanta now has or Vancouver has or LA has.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people like Lynn Shelton, Lacey Leavitt, Megan Griffiths have been able to really, you know, hone their craft here and learn the business of it. And granted, you know, they're working in LA a lot now. You know, I'll just turn on Hulu and look through some stuff. It's like, holy crap, you know, Lynn Shelton directed this. I had no idea.
Isn't that wild?
And, you know, she was in, I don't think she got the gig, but, you know, she was in talks to direct the Black Widow.
Really?
Film.
Wow.
You know, and I remember her first film in Seattle, We Go Way Back, which came out in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, women are really leading the way in Seattle, and it's very, very cool.
So definitely a good launching pad if that's what you're, if you want to eventually go to LA, maybe this is a great place to start and, you know, make a name for yourself. And...
Well, the film incentive this year, Washington Filmworks announced a new focus.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like, you know, the last 5 years, Z Nation basically ate up the film incentive.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because it employed a lot of people. And, you know, I happen to love Z Nation. I thought the show was hilarious. And I had a lot of it employed a lot of friends of mine. But they're going back to kind of the inadvertent roots of the program. Okay. When it started in 2007, 2006, 2007. And they're only going to fund Washington-initiated projects. So the writer, director, or producer of the project needs to be from Washington. Like 75 or 80% cast and crew needs to be from Washington. Oh, 75% of the shoot dates need to be in Washington.
What?
So I think it's really...
Isn't that similar to what Vancouver has? Like the rules with the Canadian, like you have to, 75% has to be Canadian.
Yeah. Canadian. And like, you know, all like basically all the below the line.
Mm-hmm.
Staff has to be Canadian. Okay. You know, the producing team can bring in above the line people,
right,
from the States, or mm-hmm. you know, they you have to apply for exemptions,
right?
Oh, okay.
But it's basically the program as it's been going for the last, you know, 12 years. Mm-hmm. Just now it's like the focus is, okay, now we're just going to focus on, you know, developing careers,
right?
You know, because that's, I mean, they started, you know, producing Megan Griffiths, Lynn Shelton, Lacey Levitt projects initially, and, you know, develop these careers. And, you know, whenever they can, they bring their projects back here.
Wow.
You know, they can't bring their TV work up here, but, totally. You know, whenever they can, they shoot their features up here.
I was going to say another ADD moment from Manny Martin. Machete was the movie.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
Just remembered it.
Yes.
Like, you've been Googling this whole time.
No, I've been sitting here and like it had popped in my head. I don't know why. I was thinking knives and stuff, and then so machete. So yeah, just had to throw that in there. So.
For the listeners that skipped the first 20 minutes, it's a very awkward moment.
Trying to remember Danny Trejo's iconic role.
Right.
So the 48. What has been? Do you have a favorite film that just stands out, that's like a hands down,
or even a top three?
Or I mean, I imagine there's so many.
There's
films.
So many, and you know, I mean, I love the process of it so much, mm-hmm. and I love, you know, just seeing. Like a couple of years ago, we had a group of eight and nine-year-olds compete. And, you know, I love their films and watching them, you know, develop over the last 3 years,
right.
and just seeing how far they've come along.
That's cool.
And, you know, it's interesting watching people who start out like not knowing anyone coming to one of the networking things and not knowing anyone, putting together a team, and then they become like a creative force and, you know, grow together.
That's awesome.
There's always, you know, a handful of films every year that just blow me away. But I always say, you know, it's kind of a bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, obvious, like hobbyists, first time filmmakers,
right.
You know, at one end. And then you have a whole bunch that are kind of in the middle. And then you have this small handful that just makes you go, what? How was that even possible?
Yeah.
But the most impressive thing is, I think, you know, the quality of the middle just keeps getting better.
That's cool.
Do you think that's because of technology? Is it because of our society is so much getting used to using?
Well, I think a lot of it's, you know, when they're, you know, 18, 19-year-olds that, you know, they don't know a world before YouTube.
Right. Yeah.
You know, or Vimeo, and, you know, they're never going to, like, entertain film school because they have, like, everything they need,
right?
You know, on the internet.
Like, oh, let me walk you through this and how to do this.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to teach a summer teen filmmaking program, and, you know, there was, like, a couple of years where the kids struggled to learn editing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was. It was just, like, 1 year. I think it was, like, 2008, 2009. All the kids came in, they're like, oh, yeah, we know how to use Final Cut. Like, okay, do you know the ripple and rolling tool? Yeah, what do you think we are, idiots? I can't get adults to use the ripple and rolling tool, you know? It's
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a tipping point, I think, in the late, you know, 2000s,
Right.
Where, yeah, all these kids just got super savvy.
Right.
And then, you know, just the processing power, power of this, you know, software itself and the quality of cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, like the Canon 5D Mark II really changed things. Just being able to get that cinematic look on a reasonably priced camera.
Yeah.
Right.
Where nothing's in focus. But, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted that shallow depth of field and, you know, they get someone's nose in focus and everything else was out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, you know, multiple facets that that have really led to that. I mean, you know, the top end is always going to be, you know, a step beyond.
Yeah.
Just because these are people, you know, a lot of them are professionals.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, decide to do the 48 because they're sick of doing the Amazon stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to do it because it's a touchstone to why I got into filmmaking in the first place.
So for a newbie like me, what's the Amazon stuff?
Like just corporate videos.
Yeah.
That
oh,
you do,
I see
like,
what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Talking head stuff.
Right. Okay.
You know, event stuff.
Right.
You know, stuff that pays the bills and actually pays very well.
Totally.
Yeah. Just not narrative stories.
Yeah.
I did I told you about that. I did the Microsoft like award show one time and like it paid really well, but it was like literally like it was only for employees. I was like, oh, this looks like a real award show. And you know, it's like nobody else is gonna see that crap. So
Yeah,
I was doing media management for an Amazon event in Vegas.
Okay.
Like 2 years ago. And, you know, I wanted to start getting more DIT, media management, assistant editing work just to fill up my unused hours. And, you know, I was just dumping cards onto hard drives and renaming files. And what I didn't know was, like, the after party that night, Reggie Watts was performing.
Oh, wow.
And I remember, you know, I used to go see MockTube all the time. I remember when he was, you know, the best vocalist in Seattle.
Right.
I didn't know that my credentials got me into that. And people were paying like $1,000 to go to this thing. I'm like, I could have seen Reggie Watts for free.
Yeah.
Man.
Tell you what, those press, like the credentials and like press passes. I mean, we didn't even know.
We only got them once.
Yeah.
Twice.
Twice.
I guess.
Yeah.
And then we tried and we didn't get them for.
But we still got it.
But we still got in.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. So, like 8 years ago, there's a local band called Culture Shock.
Okay.
And, kind of Balkan folk music meets Iron Maiden.
Right.
And singers from Sarajevo, guitarists from Sofia, Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing that I know these people.
Yeah.
You know, just because of the situations they emigrated from.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on tour with them in the Balkans. And, you know, I had a lanyard for, you know, every single show. And I just kept, you know, piling them on.
Yeah.
And I remember Guy Davis, the bassist, like, you know what? Just gang them all up. Just always wear all of them.
Yeah.
He's like, you just flash that. You can get in anywhere. You flash this, like, you know, just giant clump of lanyards.
You're right.
And people will just let you through.
It's funny how that, like, yeah, I was noticing that. Sometimes when you just act like you belong, people just let you in.
Yeah.
Places. Yeah. You don't even have to. I'm not saying that you should
do
that, but.
No.
You know, yeah. I mean, even at the festival thing, we just kind of walked in and.
Well, so we started shooting out of this. We're shooting sort of a documentary thing. I can't talk about it on here too much, but we were at Comic-Con. I wanted to, it was a good place for this, and so we just kind of walked into a corner and set up. And we did have speaker badges from the day before for the thing, so we're wearing those. But we just started interviewing people. Nobody came up and said anything.
Yeah,
we got out of the way. But I did think, you know, if you are just bold enough to do it, sometimes everyone assumes that you're supposed to be doing
that
this.
You cleared it with somebody.
Like,
I mean, when you think about it, most times security's just rented anyway.
Yeah.
They're not like.
They're not vested in the event.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did wonder. I was like, there was a line I didn't want to cross that I was like, if we get too big, someone's going to wonder.
Yeah.
But if we're just, okay, we just got the camera, just the handheld. I wanted a boom, but I was like, well, somebody might. I have someone with a boom pole.
Yeah.
Start asking questions a little bit. Because this way we could, we were set up so that we could just basically just grab the tripod and start moving if we needed to. Like, okay, well, nothing to see here. I don't know what you're talking about.
Gorilla style. You know what I mean? Just got to go for it. So.
But I'm going to try to get permission next year.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I tested the whole, you know, clump of lanyards thing on that tour. It was the final night before the final show at this huge festival in Burgas, Bulgaria, right on the Black Sea.
Right.
And they, you know, they let us in the night before. Skunk Anansi was playing and Suicidal Tendencies was playing, and I really wanted to see Suicidal Tendencies. And I did not have the credentials to get backstage on the stage that Suicidal was playing.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what, screw it.
Yeah.
Fuck it. I just flashed it to the security guard, and he's like, yeah, come on through. And I just walked right up to Mike Muir, like, hey, man, it's so cool. To, you know, like, hey, Mike, how's it going? And I got a picture with him.
That's cool.
But it totally worked.
It really does. Yeah.
Jingle, jingle.
I wonder how many people do that, just like that we don't know about. That
now I'm going to try.
I know, right?
Like, yeah, no, I'm going to bring every, I've staved every speaker pass I've had.
Same here. Yep.
I'm just going to lie, going through.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't think. Do they actually scan them at Comic-Con?
No, they don't scan them. They just kind of look and some are more diligent than others, you could see.
Some of them just kind of look like, but.
Okay, so what would you say for someone, so last year was our first time doing the 48. What would you,
tell
someone's going
winning.
In. He knows.
I'm just kidding.
He knows. What would you say the number one thing as a first timer, if they should, what should they focus on? Like, if there's one element of it, make sure you have a really good what?
Story structure.
Story structure?
Yeah.
Even more than, like, the technical elements?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
There was a film, I think it was, must have been 2008, 2009. It was still in the early years. And I never predict the audience winners.
Right.
Like, correctly. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever get it. And then I count the ballots and go, well, hot damn, that one. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming. But there is, you know, some really good films this year. But there's this one film about this guy who is just, you know, this middle-aged man, frustrated with his life, just kind of bored of being stepped on.
Yeah.
And it was like everything was overexposed and the color balance was weird. It just looked very amateur.
Yeah.
But this guy, you know, his inciting moment was, no, I'm going to live my life like a, I can't remember, I'm not a sports guy, but
yeah.
A famous baseball manager.
Okay.
And so he just started running his life like he was the manager, and everything like turned around for him. And people were just like rooting for him and cheering in the audience. I've never seen a bigger audience victory than
really?
That.
Really?
It was a landslide.
That's cool.
I mean, it was just.
Was it a comedy?
It was, yeah. It was
okay.
funny.
Here's one, this is one thing that I noticed, because we stuck. It was ironic that it would had. The writers in it, who's everyone involved in the show, was a bunch of comedians that wrote comedy, but we drew horror. And so then it was like, this isn't fun. Like we went deep into the horror, and then everything was like, people really responded to the funny stuff. And somebody else was telling me, it's like, oh, if you want to win, you got to go for comedy.
It's really interesting. It's the judges don't always go for the comedies.
Right.
I mean, like the audiences usually do, unless it's, you know, like the kids, you know, a couple of years ago, they won their audience award by a pretty large margin just because they were so, you know, damn adorable.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, the judges usually tend to go, you know, a little more serious.
Yeah. Okay.
But then you get to Filmapalooza, the big international event, and which is why I dyed my hair.
Yeah.
And, because my counterparts in Rotterdam only show up to the awards ceremony in these bright purple suits, so I wanted something to compliment them. But, you get to Filmapalooza, and you start seeing the Dutch and the French films. And they're so good, you just want to hunt those people down and punch them.
Yeah.
They're so good. And it's like, you know, every year, like, first and second place trade between Dutch and French teams.
Wow.
And our Seattle film from 2014 was a comedy. It got third place at Filmapalooza.
Wow.
Which, like, an American film placing the top three was weird enough, let alone an American comedy.
Right.
That everyone was, like, referencing throughout the entire event.
Yeah.
It was great. And,
So the Dutch and the French, they speak their own language?
Yeah, they're all subtitled.
Now,
oh, okay.
Okay. I was like, well, they should really do it in American. Or
well,
they have their
well, you know, the Dutch, they can, you know, they speak what, 40 languages,
right?
What was the film that won this year with all the subtitles? Or I mean, was nominated for everything? It was Black and White.
What?
Oh, gosh. It was like a...
Oh, the Roman? Rome?
Yeah, Rome.
Rome.
Roma.
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 Yeah, yeah,
Roma.
Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't always have to be in English. So.
But, you know, it'd be kind of weird if, you know, you're in Ho Chi Minh City.
Right.
Competing in Ho Chi Minh City and your premiere is in Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it in English.
Let's do it in English. That's films, man.
Man.
We don't do a lot in America.
I love,
but we make movies.
There you go.
Well,
I love seeing people who get inspired and then just build it up from the ground up. I was working with what are those guys? The Super Trooper guys, and I didn't realize that they had like, I mean, they were just front. I mean, they had the same buddies from college and just were like, let's make this film, and turned out to be something. So. Cool.
Yeah, they kind of hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
On their first try.
Totally. I think they got lucky, but I mean, you know, it's like, hey, it worked.
Yeah.
Okay, so the rules on the 48-hour film, like, because some people don't know what it is, so they, we'll talk about this in the intro probably, but they have to make the film from beginning to end in 48 hours. Now, nobody can get paid, right?
Nope, all volunteer.
All volunteer. And that was one thing, actually, that threw me the last year, because I was so timid about asking anyone to be involved. Because I was like, I don't have money here to pay people. And so I felt so free once I found out, like, I was like, what? I didn't know that. Oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I you can't get paid. This is great.
Right.
Hey, you want to be on the team? I love that. Can somebody get sponsored? Can it be sponsored? Like to pay for like catering and all that stuff?
Yeah, as long as all of the work put in is volunteer.
As long like they can rent, but they can pay, someone can pay for them to rent equipment and stuff to do.
Yeah, that. Just okay. As long as, you know, there's no, you know, quote unquote payroll.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because when I produced for the National Film Challenge, you know, we had a relatively well off friend, you know, paid our entry fee and we bought all the food and and so on. But no one, you know, got paid for it.
That's last year I didn't really anticipate how much it would cost to feed everybody. That I'm gonna be figuring out more creative ways this year to feed everyone. And even that last year, my wife like made chili for everybody, like vegan chili, because we had one vegan. So fired her, right? Not having her back because we're gonna eat some chicken. This
there you
time.
Go, exactly.
Manny's friend from Missoula is gonna send it out.
There you go.
This is gonna be an ongoing thing. I'm just always gonna mention your chicken restaurant. So nobody can get paid, and
can't do any creative work in advance.
No, okay, so. Okay, what about music? Because I had an original composer, but now he's gonna be in Disneyland the weekend, so I can't. How can people use music? Like, can they get from? Can they use?
You can license. Yeah, I mean, you can license music.
That was, I mean, from like all those sites that you can buy music, but though that was pre-made.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, really, when we say no creative work can be done in advance, you just can't do any writing.
Ah,
okay.
And honestly, I think you do a disservice to yourself.
Totally.
If you do write in advance,
yeah.
You know, I know that there are teams that
are probably writing.
Oh, there's some that obvious seem to be like, oh, you didn't need that line
and
at all.
Yeah, it's you know, when you see the required elements, just kind of like bang, 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 done.
Yeah.
You know, first thing, and then it's like, you know, barely just really stretching the limits of the genre.
Right.
And I mean, the thing is, usually those don't get awards anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're just so out of the spirit of the competition.
Yeah. I was an extra. I ended up an extra. I didn't know I was going to be an extra. But I was an extra in one in like 2007 when my daughter was born.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't. And it's funny because my experience on it, I didn't care for. Because they had gone. It's funny. They got horror. And I read this. When I got there, I read the script in the morning. I was like, this isn't a horror. This is at best a thriller, maybe. And they did the whole like, oh, well, the element's like a helmet. We're just going to like hold this up at some point. And then the line, they really didn't embrace it. And I was so bothered by it that I swore, I was like, one day I'm going to do this. And I'm going to just run, like, I want the thing to be about whatever it is. And
that's,
so
I think,
that's what we,
I think that's,
that was our
the
opening
best
line.
Way to do it. You know, because like, I don't see them as creative limitations. I think it actually kind of frees you up. It's like, okay, well, you know, we have a character. We need to get this person in there, you know. It doesn't have to be the main character, but
when I was theater directing a lot, I did William Ball was a director that I loved, and he wrote a thing that said he said limitations are your springboard to creativity.
Totally agree.
He actually advocated, like, when you do a play, there's different things to. He said you got to put limits on everybody, like on the designers, because they'll love it. Like sometimes he would bring in a painting that made him think of this, like this play made him think of this painting, and he said, okay, the only colors we're going to use are in this painting.
Wow.
You can only use those. And he said everybody just gets creative to think about how they can do it. So I love those limitations because...
Well, I mean, my favorite story of, you know, creative or of financial limitations sparking creativity comes from Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail.
Hmm.
The original script had horses, knights riding horses.
Right.
And I guess their budget was like $200,000. Mm-hmm. Most of that came from Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin.
Mm.
And they started researching, oh, horses cost a lot. You got to feed them. You got to board them. You have to insure them. You have to insure the riders. You have to pay for the handlers.
Yeah.
Man.
And they're like, we can't afford this. And their sound guy just went, you know, from the Flying Circus days, just went, how about this? And he just did the Foley for how he'd you know, make a horse galloping sound in the studio. And they went, oh, that's way funnier. If there's a knight galloping and there's a squire next to him, you know, clapping the coconuts, that's way funnier than a knight on a horse.
And that was a Comic-Con costume this weekend. Somebody was walking around with it.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah.
And it's one of the funniest sight gags ever.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah. Limitations are wonderful.
Yeah,
so, it's actually easier for me to write when it's just so much easier for me to write when someone gives me like the first line of dialogue.
Right,
and so that's how I took it for this. Was like, okay, we're gonna start with this line and see where that takes us.
Well, okay, so I wasn't in on the writing process. So what do you actually give them? What is each?
So okay, so I mean, basically the way the Friday works is, you know, the teams all show up, you know, between 5:30 and about 6:15, sign in. And then we have to, you know, since we have so many teams now, we have to start the genre draws.
Right.
You know, we go group by group and everyone comes and pulls their genre pair out of a hat.
Okay.
So they'll get, you know, Western or comedy, horror or, you know,
musical.
Musical.
Okay.
You know, and then you have to pick one or, you know, do both. And at 2 minutes to seven, I announce the line of dialogue, character and prop that have to be used. And then 7 p.m., boom, you're out the door. You start writing.
So line of dialogue. So, I mean, it could literally just be.
And how do you come up with it, or is it sent?
The way it works is for years it was just provided. But, you know, the longer you are a city producer, you get these fun little perks of being like, I get to be a character in another city if I want to be.
Oh. Okay.
So I've been in Portland and San Jose.
What was your occupation?
Environmentalist.
So Kurt?
Kirk or Kasha Nordenstrom, even though my wife's last name is Petora.
Okay.
In Portland, we were Kirk or Kasha Nordenstrom, environmentalist. And in most, we went down and, you know, saw the screenings. It was like, wow, there's a lot of, environmentalist serial killers. Cool. And I've had, you know, friends of mine be the name.
Right.
Yeah. I usually do that in the horror event. But I propose, you know, five props, five characters, five lines of dialogue. Okay. And then headquarters picks the final three.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And they give it to me that Friday, so I don't know
you
what
don't
it's,
even know
yeah
oh wow
that's
I mean
that's
I know funny. About 2 hours before you guys do.
Yeah.
Wait, so how many teams were there last year?
We had 76 in the summer event,
okay,
which is our second biggest year.
Okay.
We had 84 in 2016, and
so each of those 70 to 80 teams, only there's like they fall into like the same line of what prop and
yeah
so was
yeah,
there
everybody.
Everyone gets the same prop, dialogue, character.
Okay.
But we have, so we never have more than 14 films in a group, because I can fit 14 films into a 2-hour block.
Right.
You know, 12 to 13 is preferable, because you know, then
how many minutes is the film?
minimum four, maximum seven.
Okay. Maximum seven, okay.
With a minute of credits allowed.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. So, like, if you when you go to the showings,
yeah,
every single film has these three things. So it's funny just to see what other people
and to see how they okay. how they use it.
Like last year, so last year's piece, right? was puzzle.
Okay,
puzzle.
And
the three of us, there was nothing that crossed our mind besides a jigsaw puzzle.
Right,
never even occurred. So the first one we saw, and it was like a Rubik's Cube. I was like, oh well, crap.
Yeah.
Holy crap! I never. And we were like, how did we not think of anything else?
Yeah.
Like, it just, all three of us didn't think of anything.
I mean, it could have even
maybe
been
because
like
it was the first time.
There were people that used, you know, like the jumble in the newspaper or, you know, I mean, we took
good.
I, you know.
Like, could an escape room be one or for a
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could have been, like, it's just funny, like, just the three of us didn't think of anything else.
Right.
Besides a literal, like, that's the literal puzzle we thought of. Yeah. Someone used a those Chinese finger.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, some of them, I was like, oh, I'm jealous. They thought of that. I mean, we made our whole thing about a puzzle. So
yeah. Not bad. What, best use of a prop?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
That's right. First time out.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I always like to, you know, come up with suggestions that'll, you know, for the prop especially, that are easy, won't cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know. Chances are you could find it at 2 a.m.
There you go. Yeah.
Although I think my favorite prop was in 2012. It was a traffic cone.
Oh.
And there were, you know, a lot of interesting uses, but there's this one film, and these guys haven't done it in years.
Yeah.
But this, you know, one woman, she's very meek in her office job at a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone just steps all over her. And she just goes out to her car to have lunch by herself mm-hmm. with her thoughts. And then this, like, raver guy's handing out flyers and just music blaring. And he's going to put a flyer on her car. And she's like, no, don't. And he's, like, shaking his head, yeah. And she gets out,
mm-hmm.
gets out of the car. She's finally had enough. She sees a traffic cone. She picks it up, and she starts using it as a you know, a microphone. Like,
yeah, totally.
And she literally finds her voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, is able to, she finds her confidence.
Yeah,
it was like, that is brilliant. That was like, I think it's probably the best use of the prop I've ever seen.
Turn it into a bullhorn. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm like, what can I do?
I know, right? Yeah,
a
whatever.
Story? Well, this was, if we had picked a horror with a traffic cone, I don't even know
what
I would have done.
You know, some people just get it in the background. You know, friend.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, no, it's like you utilize it. It's
well, you mentioned the year that there was the helmet.
Yeah,
and I used that year mm-hmm. as a cautionary tale because there was one film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm editing the masters back then, you know, I had a 13-inch monitor,
right?
And you know, so I'm looking at everything, you know, just tiny on the screen. And I said, just make it obvious. It doesn't need to be a big part of the story.
Right.
Just make sure I can see it.
There you go.
And there's one film. I'm like, nope, they didn't get the prop in. No, we're done. Then in the theater, giant screen, very back of a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bicycle with a bright helmet hanging off of the. If I had blinked.
Yeah.
If I had gone to the bathroom or to the concession stand, I'd have missed it.
Wow.
So it's like.
I still think you should kick him out. Like, come on. Use
no,
it.
No.
Come like, on.
I'm, you know, the rules the are the rules. And I got to.
The subtlety. Of.
And the line of dialogue is the number one disqualification.
Right.
People say it wrong?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. You'd think.
In the heat of the moment, you know, when you don't have like a script like a dedicated script supervisor on right. there. We had one team made a great film. They got the line of dialogue wrong by a word.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like they contracted, you know, would not or something.
Yeah.
It was like they just blatantly got a word wrong. And I could hear it like in the theater because everyone knows the line of dialogue.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I heard the entire room go, oh.
Wow.
And then I started getting all these, because everyone knew it was a really good film. And
yeah.
I started, you know, my phone just started blowing up. Like, did you see that? Did you see that? They got the line wrong. I'm like, yes, I know.
Now, were they telling you they got the line wrong, so disqualify them? Or
yeah.
was it like, oh, come on, they did it. But
no,
come
they were
on.
Like, just make sure the judges don't see it. And, you know, I mean, I knew.
Yeah.
I actually had a 4-hour conversation with the filmmaker, and he was trying to convince me to bend the rules, and I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
No. I absolutely will not.
Exactly.
There's no amount of money that will make me bend the rules.
Exactly.
Because I, you know, I believe in...
It's integrity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I believe in this event. I believe, you know,
right,
in the cause.
Yeah.
You know, fairness.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that, and so that's the, okay, no, that's going to be one of my
questions.
That's
the number
What's
one,
the
yeah.
the biggest one mistake people make?
LA. Yeah, it's the line of dialogue.
All right, good. I was harping on that line. Yeah. I was like, we got to get this. It has to be perfect. Let's do it.
Well, that's why, you know, really the number one DQ is being late. 15 to 20% are late every year.
Ah.
And, you know, it's really sad, especially when you see a really good one that comes in late. Even worse is when it's like a minute late.
Ooh.
I've had people try and, you know, like, oh, come on, you know, we were on the block. And I'm like, no, you have to have, you know, you have to have the on time ticket in your hand.
Yeah.
I was at a pizza place. Mm-hmm. It was the drop off, and there was somebody editing the film in the pizza place.
Smart.
And so, I mean, it was hours before, but I mean,
I know exactly who it was, too.
I don't know who it was, but I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like,
yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, why even save it for the last second? You know, it's just like, give yourself at least.
But it's not the last second, man. You're so...
Yeah.
Like, it's such a short amount of time.
I mean, I know, but
they were
like,
up all night. Like, we were done hours before.
Yeah.
But we had a big sound error
That
got missed. Correct. One line of dialogue was dropped, and we hadn't watched didn't watch the last one, and everybody had left. And I was like, I can't fix this. well, here's...
Yeah.
Turning it in, and so I was like, well.
there was a film in 2009. This one team opted for, we used to have a wild card drawing, so if you didn't like your genre, you could turn it in and gamble on the wild card. We don't do that anymore. I always hated like administering the wild card procedure at the end, because everyone's just like so scattered, they want to get out. It was wrangling cats. But one team, they got kung fu or stoner film. You know, just late night kung fu stoner. So they made a kung fu stoner film called Haekwondo.
Oh, my God.
And seriously, if it had been on time, I think it would have taken Filmapalooza. It was so full of jump cuts and distressed film. It was... bad lip sync. It was so funny and so well done.
Dang.
And I remember, you know, when we had the Q&A,
yeah,
they were like, okay, kids, you know, we drew stoner film, and don't do this competition high. Like, we just got a little too stoned and lost track of time.
That's funny.
Man, that is hilarious.
So, okay, so if someone draws the they have the either or, because you say they have to pick one, though, when they turn it in.
Yeah.
They can turn in the hybrid?
Yeah.
Or do they have to pick one?
Yeah, you can say we did both.
Oh. Okay.
But it's like, you know, I watch a lot of cooking shows.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you're given a... You know, you're like on Chopped, your four ingredients.
Right.
And then you decide to... you know, just get a little crazy and, you know, just incorporate one ingredient like way too many times, or make two dishes. And they're like, well, now we have to judge two dishes.
Yeah. Like, oh, number one thing in Top Chef. I get so mad. Yeah. We flip out every year. Like, do you not watch this show? Cause they always go like a duo. Oh, I'm giving you a shrimp duo. And they're always like, I wish they would have done one dish.
Yeah. Cause then they get judged on two.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. So, you know, I mean, I recommend just, you know, pick one. You can incorporate the two, but you know, if it's...
It never occurred to me that musical might show up as an option. Just never entered my mind. And I was so bummed, because when I talked to the guys later, like, because we had a composer, I forgot that we had one of my leads was a dancer.
Mm.
So we could have choreographed. There was at least like four or five singers on my team. And later I was like, well, son of a bitch. Should have done a musical.
You could have anyway if you wanted to.
Like,
yeah.
But I was just like, I just wasn't prepared. Like, okay, how the hell do you do a musical this fast? Like, okay, because I'm not even sure the steps.
Yeah.
That we'd have to make the music right now, right? So that they could dance to it tomorrow.
That would be a tough one. Has anybody ever done a musical?
Oh yeah, lots of times. Wow. You know, with varying degrees of success.
Right.
Yeah, I imagine.
But, you know, if you have a good composer,
totally.
I mean, that's the first thing you do. Mm-hmm. You know, you just get a scratch track.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So
you're not making a La La Land right off the bat, though, huh?
Right.
No.
So, but this year I'll be prepared for it.
There
just
you go.
In case.
Okay.
You might be singing some Luther Vandross. Right.
What?
Marvin Gaye. Some Luther Vandross.
Well,
this is awesome. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure. This
thank
is fun
you for the shirts. Yeah, man.
Yeah, he brought us some shirt. We haven't seen him yet.
Yeah, so I don't even might, remember which
they
ones
could be
I
racist.
Brought.
I don't even know.
If they are, I'm so
he's like,
sorry.
He's like, oh, that's the other. Sorry, wrong bag. Wrong bag.
I mean, I know I have the Swedish and yeah, you know, Norwegian flags.
Those are badass, by the way. Just,
that's mom. That's dad.
Nice. There you go.
Isn't that a great? Isn't it great though, Manny?
What's
when sometimes like Jasmine Silvera came in, brought us copies of the book.
Oh, that's awesome!
Oh, Seattle 48 Horror, nice, Return to the Filming, Filming Dead. Was that the? Do you have a theme each year?
No, we my counterparts around the world. We like to show off the T-shirts we make. I'm a Slayer fan, so that one. Sleep
what's
is for
the one?
Sleep is for the living.
Sleep is for the living. Nice. You know what? I think I might have tried to do the horror last year if we hadn't drawn horror for the genre in summer. And I was like, oh, I can't do another one right now. Like, I just can't do that. I was like, man, what am I going to be? Because we're like comics and it's funny.
Yeah.
And then my favorite, one of our favorite comics, I mean, not a stand up, but with Jordan Peele being, was like, now he's a horror guy. And
yeah,
I was like, I can't have Jordan's career. I'm not
going to
do that.
And he's so good at it.
I know.
Right?
I
mean, I was a latecomer to Key and Peele, but
yeah,
when a friend finally turned me on to it, it was like, this is some of the best sketch comedy I've
right
seen since Kids in the Hall and
you
know, Python, you know.
That was one thing I forgot to bring up on the podcast was that the new Twilight Zone, huh?
Is,
yeah. So I'm excited.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be April 1st is
that's
when
right
it premieres. So we'll have an episode soon about
right
it to talk about.
Oh, I'm looking at it. It's a good choice for that.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah,
just his sensibilities. He understands creepy.
Exactly. And I guess they have some big names in it, like Seth Rogen and some real
actors. I think Tom Cruise is in it.
Oh, no joke.
I think I saw him.
Wow.
In one of the on an airplane one.
Impressive.
I wonder, you know, a lot of people say comedy is the hardest to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if there's something about like, well, he's tackled comedy, so is almost anything else simpler? Like, I'm going to study this a little. I'm going to read up about this because I'm wondering, like, if comedy is the hardest, is it almost like, well, now it's the way your brain works, is that way they can focus in on non-comedy and do it so well?
That's interesting.
Well, you know, one of the key elements of, you know, comedy, particularly in films, is the idea of the gap.
Right.
Which is, you know, the difference between expectation and outcome.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a, you know, very basic dramatic unit.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what tends to make things funny is the larger that gap is, you know,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
that leap that you have to make to connect those two things.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's why comedy is so hard because, you know, connecting these two things.
Right.
That people can, you know, kind of take the ride.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he going from Mad TV to Key and Peele, you know, he just spent so much time honing his comedy
mm-hmm
chops. That, you know, he really understands the importance of the gap and
totally
story, you know, story structure. Because, I mean, I think Get Out is a bulletproof movie.
Yeah.
Structurally. I go back and rewatch it and it's like, yep, I can't pick a hole in this.
Well, and I guess the thing is comedy is all about cutting, like, and getting everything out in as few words as you possibly can. So I would almost expect he's so honed on that, he has to be. How tight can I make this?
Yeah.
It's efficient. You know, it's efficiency and like intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just he's really good at getting his intent across. Because I've never enjoyed being so uncomfortable as I was watching Get Out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm,
it's like, you know, he said his goal was to make white people uncomfortable in the
yeah
theater, and it was like, oh god, I've said that. Oh, I'm horrible. Oh my god, I just, you know. There were times where I was just like embarrassed. And like, oh.
We've all been.
Well
there
done, sir. Well done.
Oh man, did Gretchen see it?
No,
oh, okay.
No.
Crystal watched
there's not
my
a
wife saw it.
There's no chance
really
in hell Gretchen would ever watch that movie.
Was he ever watch a horror?
No.
Yeah, no, Crystal's not big on horror.
She can't. No, I can't get her to watch a comedy.
Really?
Like, I mean, she gets so tense about everything.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No. The only she had a baby, and so now everything's a little intensified. She won't watch any movies, but she will watch Endgame.
Oh,
she's like, well, I have to see how this ends. Like,
yeah, you have
I
to.
Can't.
Like, have you seen all the Marvel movies?
Oh yeah, I've seen all of them.
Like, she's kinda, even Black Panther's her favorite superhero. She's never seen. She still hasn't seen the movie yet.
Really?
Or Ant Man? I was like, Ant Man's not bad. It's pretty comedy. Like,
yeah,
Ant-Man's
fun.
Wasp.
Oh yeah,
Ant-Man
that
Wasp.
Was a fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Wasp one.
Oh yeah, that was fun too.
So, which I don't think they're not necessary for her to watch it. Or just to see Endgame.
Maybe.
I think
Ant-Man
and
Wasp.
Yeah,
because he got. So, well, spoiler alert, got stuck in the quantum realm, right?
And, yeah.
And he's, so.
Which isn't even really part of the movie.
Yeah, no, it's just the very end credit,
kind
right?
Of.
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess they talk
but
about
it. But I think Black Panther is like the best standalone film, you know, in the MCU the first Iron Man.
So I've lost my black card on this. I didn't like it that much, but it might have been that I saw it at midnight. But
he thinks it was too much like Lion King, and
yeah,
I was like,
people
well,
get tossed off waterfalls and like, you know what I mean? And like,
which I was just like,
to,
that just
family
means
trying to take the throne and stuff.
Yeah, but Lion King was basically just Hamlet. So I'm like, so what? You hate Shakespeare?
Yeah. So was Strange Brew though.
Okay. Yeah. See,
Strange Brew is Hamlet as well.
Okay. See. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that I think my thing is it felt overhyped, and I was expecting maybe something else. And then when I saw it, it wasn't what I wanted it to be. So I'm trying to think what my favorite Marvel movie was. Probably Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting a crap movie, and then all of a sudden. So I think that's my big thing.
And
now
you have feelings for a tree.
I know. Yeah, seriously, right? It's so crazy to me because it's like even – I'll tell you this with not Get Out, but what's the newest? Us. Right? Or, yeah, like, it's so funny. There was somebody who had a joke. He was like, did you see the movie Them? I was like, you racist motherfucker. but basically, like, I think that it was overhyped. When I see that IGN scored it a 9.5, I'm, like, going in thinking, oh, this is going to be better than, you know, Get Out. And then all of a sudden, it's, like, not quite, you know, it's a whole different movie.
You know?
And so it's, like, I think I was expecting this completely different thing. But it's still good, but it just wasn't. In my mind, a 9.5.
Well, I thought Killmonger was a fantastic.
Oh yeah, totally
antagonist.
Yeah,
I don't even want to. I don't want to call him the villain of the film.
Right,
he was a great antagonist.
Right,
fantastic.
That's how I felt about Thanos in the actual, you know, Infinity War. He was like, gosh, this guy came from a like poor planet and just wanted people to have, and then.
You're like, you know what? He makes a point. He has a good point. You know.
But I think those are some of the best movies is when you can relate to the villain a little bit. You know what I mean? You kind of see.
Well, Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds.
Yes, exactly.
Like, am I really feeling sympathetic towards a Nazi? Damn you, Tarantino! Damn you! So, you can't make a Nazi charming,
right?
That's just wrong.
Can you think of any villains that you?
That I liked?
Yeah.
Telling Sierra something about like, oh, actually, they're like, what character is your favorite? And
like
I said,
all the
well, it might have been like them. And she's like, they're a bad guy. I was
Wait,
like,
who?
Well, I can still like the character. I forget which one. I'm trying to think of it. But there was a recent, something we've seen recently that I was like, I really like that character.
Oh, okay.
But she was like, how can you like the bad guy? I'm like, well, I like the story.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
story's
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, so. It's like villains are the, I was explaining when you're older, you're going to want to play the villain.
Yeah.
Like, you want to play the villain because it's fun.
You know what's funny? I can never draw myself to do it. So, like, in all of my Star Wars games, like Knights of the Old Republic, you know, you get to choose if you want to be bad or good. I can't make a bad decision for some reason.
Oh, yeah. No. I do that. No, but I just mean, like, when you play a role, like,
usually in
a movie or a play.
Right.
The bad guy is usually the more interesting character.
Yeah. So, speaking of that, the movie that I didn't see with our guy from Get Out who played the main character.
Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah. So, he was in, oh, gosh, what was the movie? The Widows or something like that? The one with.
I heard that was good.
My wife saw it. She said it was okay. But she said that he played such a dark role. You know what I mean? And it's like.
Well, he's a fantastic actor.
Right.
He's fantastic.
Telling you, English people are stealing all of our American roles, man. So.
Dude, they're stealing all, like, all the sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like, everyone in Walking Dead that's black, they're all English.
Like, except, all for Danny, watch, except for Danny.
You're right.
Danny Guerrera. She's not British.
Wait. Michonne?
Michonne.
Okay. She's not? Okay.
I don't think so.
You know, I think you're right on that. But there's so many roles that I watch, and then I hear them talking, and I'm like, what the hell? There's no... There's no black people.
Yeah, when you hear like,
there's no black people in Britain. What's happening?
Especially like, I mean, with Superman, when Henry Cavill was all of a sudden, you know, really speaking, I was like, what the fuck is Superman?
Seriously, the guy fights for the American way. He's not even really American. And we're building a wall.
That's right.
We need to build a bubble. Yeah, there. Keep them out of the sky. Taking our American acting jobs.
Oh, God.
All right.
All right.
So, black and a half?
Black and a half.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.